Cylinder. We are your new member of the A-Team, the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. We're also your podcast home for all things Detroit Pistons. I'm one of your co-hosts, David Fernandez. You may have seen me writing for DetroitBadBoys.com, the SB Nation affiliate. You can find some of my writings on there. You can find some of my tweets over in Twitterland at @_Fernantula. This show is at the Inside the Cylinder, and Cylinder is spelled CYLNDR. If you want to go give us a follow on there, that'd be great. I want to introduce my co-host to the show, Joey Mack.
Hey guys, this is Joey Mack, your co-host here at Inside the Cylinder. You can find me on Twitter at @J.MACK. So Dave and I basically know each other from back in our college days at Central Michigan University.
Fire up
chips for sure. You can also find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, wherever it is that you listen to podcasts, we will be there. And more importantly, you can definitely find us on almightyballer.com. And let's get into it.
Yeah, shout out to Chris for having us on here. Definitely happy to be bringing you guys all the stuff about the Pistons, a little bit of what we're seeing. Originally we just wanted to go kind of just hop right into it and talk about what the hell is going on with your Detroit Pistons, one of the more schizophrenic teams in the NBA. What we're going to be looking at least right off the bat, is just some of the few games. And when you're listening to this, it's going to be, post Golden State, pre Utah. So we don't have any Utah stuff, but definitely hoping for a win out there. The Pistons have been, like I said, pretty schizophrenic. They've had good wins and bad wins, which the Pistons don't have the luxury of. There's no such thing as a bad win for this team at this point, and then some pretty bad losses. So just kind of want to talk a little bit about that and some of the trends that we're seeing and some of the stuff that's just been kind of worrisome. Joe, one of the things that, looking back at some of the games, this was a while ago now, but looking back on that Miami Heat game, I think that's definitely a game where you see just how timid the Pistons are. I guess that's kind of the best word to describe that game. They were timid, and they were, pulled away in the fourth, but that was a D-League Miami Heat team. It wasn't even a full – the Miami Heat are bad as is, but that wasn't even a full Miami Heat team, even with their current roster.
Right.
So, I don't know, Joe, did you see anything in that game that was – gave you – reason to be happy or a reason to be, curl up in a ball?
A little bit of both, I'd say. I mean, so that was six games ago. I think going into the game, we were all excited because, none of the Heat stars were playing. Dragic was out. Whiteside was out. Deion Waiters, he's not a star, but, compared to the rest of them, he can hoop pretty well. So, pretty optimistic going into that game. The Heat came out, scored 37 in the first. We're hitting threes left and right. And I think since that game, there's kind of been a consistent trend over the last couple that sort of started with that game. But, we ended up with the win, so obviously we battled back pretty well. Got to guard the three ball a bit better. So, a win's a win for this team right now. Anything that'll get us rolling, we're happy about. A difficult win for sure.
Yeah, and a difficult win to watch. We're going to go a little bit more into this later on in the podcast, but some of that, just the defensive liabilities that this team has kind of just shown. At multiple positions, at multiple times, whether it be right off the bat or, late in the fourth quarter when you're trying to close a game. There was just a lot of the trends that you see with this Pistons team that's been, upsetting and kind of worrying.
Yeah.
Especially when it was almost, I don't want to call that a must-win game. That's kind of a cliche. And also too early, frankly, to be saying that a lot of teams you see throughout the course of the NBA and the history of the NBA, you know, that break, that All-Star break really can change fortunes for a team for some reason, just to have a reprieve for a little bit, you start to see better play. So I don't think we're necessarily there yet, especially with the cluttered and crappy Eastern Conference. So that's one positive, but all in all, I don't know.
Yeah.
It kind of left a bad taste in your mouth.
I would say that it would have, it's not necessarily a good or a bad win, but if it would have been a loss, it would have been an absolutely demoralizing loss.
Yeah.
You know, so we snuck out with the win, but, you know, if we ended up on the other side of things, that could really kill a team's confidence for sure.
Sure, yeah. And these are all, you know, 2017 games going in, you know, Pacers game, bad, bad loss. Just a typical sort of unenthused team getting smoked early. The stars going off. We have no answer for Paul George, obviously. You know, Marcus Morris, Tobias Stanley, whoever we're throwing at him. You know, not necessarily something that can put up with the level of star that he is. I think there's only a few guys in the league. You know, LeBron James, maybe Kevin Durant.
Kawhi Leonard.
You know, there's Jimmy Butler maybe, but even though he's got a few inches down on him. That's just another bad,
they're
bad game.
They're kind of...
I don't need to talk too much about that Pacers game, you know, other than another just home demoralizing loss. One thing that I wanted to talk about, though, was the Hornets game. Now, that game was, you know, about a week ago at this point. But the Pistons were up big. It looked like they were going to wipe the Hornets off the floor. Everyone was kind of firing on all cylinders. And then you start to see this sort of timid and safety net of playing with the lead, where the Pistons don't do that well. While we're not a fast-paced team, they're not Memphis Grizzlies-like or Spurs-like in you know, kind of slowing down a game to their pace when they have a lead. They look frantic lots of times. I think this is a testament to this season. And we were one bank off of Marcus Morris's back from just, I would have cried. I don't know. I would have cried.
Yeah.
I would have been embarrassed. And
it would have been tough to fall asleep that night, without a doubt.
For sure, especially with the big lead.
Yeah.
Joe, is that a good win?
No, that's a really, again, a win's a win, but that's not the way you want to win the game, especially going into the fourth. We had a lead, we were playing well. You want to carry that momentum going forward, especially after that we were going on a West Coast trip. So you want that to kind of carry you, but then, you know, going into the fourth, Kemba started carving up our defense. We couldn't check him. He was getting into the paint at will. And he was kicking out. They're hitting 3-point shots. And kind of to your point earlier, on offense in that situation, we saw this against the Sacramento Kings a bit as well, which we'll get into a little bit later. But, you know, when we get these big leads, what we start doing is we just run an ISO offense, which isn't efficient and is predictable by the defense, and it's just gets everyone very stagnant and kind of out of the game to a certain extent. That's what we started doing against them.
Kills rhythm.
It kills rhythm.
Kills morale.
Exactly. So the other team's moving around on offenses and on defense, and we're just trying to pound the ball into the floor. One thing I will say about that game that was a bright spot was Boban Marjanovic for 15 points and 19 boards. He played really, really well, which is good to see. So
yeah, and it wasn't garbage time, Boban. You know, that was
right.
Very much you could see why we signed him and why, you know, it was a serious signing. It was, you know, he wasn't, I don't know what he's at. I want to say somewhere around the $6 million a year.
I believe he's three years, 21 million. So yeah, 7 million.
Yeah, 3 years, 21 mil. And that's, as your third option for a center, that's a lot of money. That's more than we're paying our backup point guard.
Yeah.
Because I believe he's at 6 years.
18.
6 mil.
3 years, 18 mil. Yeah.
Yeah, 3 years, 18 mil. So 6 mil a year. So, that's a lot of money to play at a guy, and I think a lot of the Pistons fans' mindset going into Boban was, okay, we now have a trade, you know, now we can feature Aron Baynes a little bit, maybe trade him. You know, you don't need three centers in this NBA. especially when you have plenty of lineups where you see John Lohr at the five, and you know some more small ball lineups that you have to contend with. You don't need three centers, so I, you know, that was a bright spot for sure. Was to see Boban really, you saw the problems that he gives teams just with his height and length. This isn't something new or shocking, but it's really difficult to block a ball that is almost at dunk, you know, level altitude.
Right.
When you haven't even left the floor. And he does a really great job at getting in position. He's really good at cementing himself down low in the post and making it easy because he doesn't have the type of repertoire to you know, back down dudes and to shake and, you know, he doesn't have any post
moves. I'll say this. He's not just some 6'7" post who's there just to kind of catch lobs and sort of put his hands up under the basket to protect the rim. He does have a decent amount of skill. He can shoot free throws, which is huge at that height. He's in really good shape. He can shoot from 6 or 7 feet. You know, it's kind of a weird shot because he's the ball's so high, he kind of just shoots it with one hand, reaches over the defender, and there's nothing the defender can do about it. So he has a big...
You saw with that line, he got to the line so often.
Yeah.
Like he was eating. He was like James Harden in that game.
Yeah, he was.
It was literally...
I think I saw a rib move there at one point.
The bench was going ham.
Yeah, too. Yeah,
They were loving that.
Yeah.
They were, you know, it was all good.
Yeah.
It was, you know, looking at another game more recently, Trailblazers, that game was a heart stopper. It was kind of the opposite of the Hornets game. In that Hornets game, you saw, I believe, an 18-point lead, a double-digit fourth-quarter lead, just diminished before your eyes. It was, you know, before you knew it, it was a one-possession game. It was like you blinked and it was over. And then all of a sudden, the Pistons were saved by the bell. Opposite happened with the Trailblazers game. Hard-fought game going on throughout the most of the contest. Entering into the fourth quarter, Pistons down by 7. They really found a way to kind of put it together late in that game and got themselves in position, in a winning position, to close out that game. And while they weren't able to do it in OT1 or OT2, or sorry, in regular time or OT1 and OT2, we finally put the dagger in the coffin there. Or the nail in the coffin, excuse me. And... one thing that we saw with that game that I thought was extremely promising and really had me feeling good as a Pistons fan was you started to see Reggie looked like Reggie for a bit. And Andre Drummond was looking pretty stellar himself. I think with Reggie, you really got to see, and Andre, you saw the kind of the maximum efficiency that you get out of the pick and roll, that those two run so, when it's on, it's deadly. When it's lackadaisical, it's soft and it's nothing. But that's our biggest weapon that we have as in featured offense.
Yeah. What that does for us as a team too is it opens up the perimeter shooting for guys like KCP, Marcus Morris, and Tobias. And
defense has to collapse once the guard penetrates as well as he does, or another defender has to rotate off of their man to help on Andre Drummond on the roll situation. Then you got shooters wide open, which is what this offense is supposed to be. And you didn't see much of that be successful for a while. It just kind of looked, they would run it, and it was kind of like the Einstein thing. You know, you're crazy if you keep running it, and it's not going to work. That was a horrible way of putting that quote, but you get my point.
Yes. Insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. I believe.
Yeah, that's all. You're going crazy, insane. You get the point.
Yeah, and it felt like that for a while, honestly, with them running that.
It felt like it's just nothing's working. The stagnant offense is predictable.
Right.
And,
honestly, that's kind of how it's felt with Marcus Morris, too, a bit, you know, with his lack of shooting. Well, he's shooting, but he's just not making shots. You know,
sure.
What are your thoughts on that exactly? I think that's kind of affected our offense and our team to a pretty significant degree. Obviously, he's capable of shooting. He proved it late last year. He was one of our more efficient shooters for sure. And at the beginning of the year, he was hitting shots too. You know, I think I speak for most people. When he gets the ball on the block, I feel very confident that he's going to get a good shot, and he hits really difficult shots as well.
He does. He's like the league's probably would be one of the best one-on-one players in the NBA.
Straight up ISO. You know, he's kind of Carmelo Light in that sense. But,
sure.
You know, there was a couple plays there towards the end where Sam and Gundy.
Trailblazers game?
Yeah, Trailblazers game where we had Marcus Morris set a pick at the top of the key in order to get a mismatch at the free throw line with, I believe it was Damian Lillard both times.
I think it was C.J. McCollum.
I think you might be right. It was C.J. McCollum. Yeah. Sometimes, yeah.
But yeah, that's something that, yeah, I wanted to talk about. You're right. And it's a good point to bring up Marcus in that situation because he has been, you know, looking at that Portland Trailblazers game, and one thing that we've talked about before, Joe, is just the predictability of this offense. It's really teams can game plan against it. Teams know it's almost – not that you could, but it seems like – a zone could work on this team sometimes with how predictable they are and how they're always having, you know, guys standing outside of the three-point line kind of waiting for something to happen, and then you just see if the Reggie pick and roll works, and if it doesn't work, then you really got nothing. You know, some of their other better offensive plays when you were in sets for KCP, we can get a little bit more into that later, but it seems like that's not a big feature of the offense. But one thing that was refreshing, like you said, Marcus Morris, we ran plays for – even though Marcus Morris had a really bad game in that game, his shooting percentage was something around like maybe 29%. It was low 30s at best. But the Pistons were not going to just do the same thing over and over. What they did was run a play for Marcus Morris, got him on a mismatch, and he hit back-to-back jumpers, which were, in most situations, that was the you know, that would have been the final straw. That would have been the last buckets needed to kind of put that game to bed. Without a few miraculous shots by C.J. McCollum and a really nice three from Allen Crabbe, that would have put that game to bed. So I thought that was refreshing to see Stan do something different for once.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
to run a play for a guy that we need to get his confidence up if this team's going to be doing anything.
Well, on that note, too, generally it's Reggie Jackson taking the last shot of the game or kind of closing it out in the fourth. I think he sort of attempted to put the team on his back and close that game out. It didn't necessarily work, which is okay. But what we did in the second overtime was call a play for KCP, coming off that screen to shoot the last three-pointer, which I thought was a brilliant play. I don't think you want to force it into Reggie's hands. I think you need to feed it to the hot hand, which was KCP [S2] Sure. [S1] That game. Kind of trust in him and that was a difficult shot as well.
I mean, we did it two times in you know, the first in regular time, and then in overtime we did the Reggie ISO to end the game, and it didn't work. Reggie got lucky; they didn't get called for a travel on that team.
Yeah.
He went up and down, and he didn't shoot the ball, and they didn't call it. But you know, and he missed. It was a really bad, ugly shot.
It was,
and
yeah.
You know, you're right. It was feed the hot hand and get it to KCP how he likes it, off a screen in motion. That's how that man likes to shoot threes.
Yeah.
And pulling up. That's how I like him shooting threes.
One more thing on that game before we move on to the Sacramento game, which I'd probably rather forget. But I would like to note how well Stanley Johnson played against the Trailblazers. Allen Crabbe was crazy hot. He was coming off screens and basically shooting at will. Without a hand in his face, but then we put Stanley Johnson on him. He was fighting through screens. He was very physical and aggressive with Allen Crabbe and basically took him out of the game from that point forward. Unfortunately, C.J. McCollum got really hot and kind of carried them from
that
point
forward.
Yeah, there's nothing you can do about that, but I thought Stanley Johnson played really well, added a new dimension to our defense that we don't – I mean, Marcus Morris is a big body, and he plays good, serviceable defense – but Stanley Johnson gets steals and creates fast breaks and gets blocks.
And he does things that don't show up on the spreadsheet, too. What he does, you know, even when he's not getting steals, he'll get his hand in the passing lanes, break up the passing lane, and it might lead to a steal or it might lead to, you know, another player getting a steal and then them pushing the fast break. It could lead to the ball going out of bounds and then you know, 4 seconds left on the shot clock for the opposing teams. Things that you really have to be a Pistons fan. And if you're listening to this podcast, I assume that you're either a big NBA fan or a Pistons fan.
Or a family member.
Yeah, shout out to Mom, for sure. But what you're saying is right. You know, Stanley's, so much of what he's been doing, even though his numbers, even in his last five games, in his season, are down. You know, he's at 3.6 points per game. He's at 2.2 rebounds. It's still a lot better than whatever it is that he was doing in the beginning of the season. And look, I think we've talked about this before, Joe. He needs to do that to get playing time.
Yeah. I think at the beginning of the year, his shot's been broke all year. Let's be honest with ourselves. He just hasn't been able to find a rhythm, and he had some sort of issues with Stan Van Gundy, and due to his offensive inefficiency, he wasn't seeing a lot of minutes, and he wasn't playing well in his minutes. And I think it kind of got into his head that, when you're not hitting shots, it's difficult to find a rhythm, especially if you're not getting playing time. And it gets in a player's head that if you keep missing shots, you're not going to get any playing time. And I think that's kind of what
especially when you're younger.
Especially when he's not, what is he, 20 now? I mean,
some vets are used to coming off the bench. They've been coming off the bench for 7 years. Yeah, Stanley Johnson is a young 20.
And very athletic, too. So he can generally get his shot for the most part, but he's just not hitting it. So I think for him, it came down to really playing aggressive, sound defense in order to earn minutes. And so... now he's starting to do that and be a pretty significant stopper for our defense, which allows him to, kind of be in Stan Van Gundy's graces and have a little freedom on offense to shoot a shot. If he's playing this kind of defense, he's going to get floor time and he's going to be able to shoot shots without worrying that if he misses it, he's going to be taken out of the game. So he's earned this playing time. He's earned the right to be a big major player on offense. And, I'm excited going forward to see what he brings to the team.
I agree. And I just wanted to pull up. I truly do not know what his shots per game are. It looks like they're somewhere around 4-ish. So
that kind of skews the stats. Like, he's not shooting a high percentage, but when you're only shooting 4 shots per game,
you'd like to see him shoot a little bit more, and I think Greg Kelsler has pointed this out a few times. Just shoot it. Don't hesitate. You can't hesitate in the NBA. If you hesitate, you're going to miss because you're not in rhythm. And when you're not in rhythm, then you're going to be off balance or stiff arming a shot. You really got to just let it fly for him, and I think that he's hopefully starting to get the types of conversations that you would hope that Stan Van Gundy would be having with him. Saying, "Shoot, Stanley. You're allowed to shoot. If you're open, shoot it. Some of your shot making might be a difference makers in certain games, especially when think about a situation where dribble penetration from Reggie or Ish Smith on a fast break, who's always wide open, standing with his arm up outside the 3-point line. It is Stanley Johnson. I see that man with his hand up like he's." In the third grade,
it's both hands up. It's yeah. It's both hands. It's like he's taking charge, like
taking the ghost charge. Yeah, yeah. The 3-point line on offense.
Yeah, we wanted to take it. I was watching the game.
Which game?
It was a couple nights ago, and I think I said out loud. I was like, I feel like Stanley Johnson is like my son or something. I want him to do so well, so badly. That I just want him to get the rock, and I want him to be able to play freely and get his shot and get his playing time. I want Coach to put him out there,
Sure.
So, in due time, I think, David, we should stop delaying the Sacramento game and kind of get into
let's talk
really
a little bit about the Sacramento game.
None of us are happy about it, but we got to do it.
Sacramento, if you watched it, then I'm sorry if you watched it. I watched it after the fact. I went back and watched it because I live in Boston. So I have to go to bed and I have to wake up early because unfortunately this is not my full-time job. So these 10:30 starts are hard for me on certain days. And I woke up, first thing I did was check my phone just to see what might have happened, kind of Christmassy, like, oh, I wonder if the Pistons won. I wonder if I'm going to get to watch a good game or get to watch, you know, even if the game starts to collapse in certain moments, are they going to come back and win? And just know that going into watching the game. And what do I read is an 18-point collapse midway through the third quarter. Really, in a game, it would have been their third win in a row. It would have been their second win in a row on a five-game West Coast road trip. It would have been kind of just, and it would have been a statement game in a certain sense. Like, yeah, we won by 18 points against a better Kings team, with real players on their team, at least, unlike the Miami Heat. And that didn't happen, Joe. No, that's not what I got to watch. I got to watch some poor play on the Pistons, no doubt, but some really, really poor coaching, I thought. I thought that was one of the things that resonated to me the most out of that game was Stan Van Gundy's lineup decisions, Stan Van Gundy's persistence with lineups when things were going wrong. One thing that I noted while watching that game was, so if Boban's in the lineup, it's a new lineup because he normally plays garbage minutes. So no matter what lineups that you see with his percentages, with whatever players that he's playing with, it doesn't necessarily matter because they're always garbage minute lineups for the most part. But when he is playing extended time, that's still them figuring it out. So the Ishmith Boban combo of the rabbit and the tortoise and the rabbit and the hare, excuse me, that didn't work really well. And that's when the lead started to get cut into. That's when it went from 18 to 15 to 12, you know, to 9 to 7. That's when that lead started to go away. And for some reason, Stan Van Gundy kept that going for far too long. And before you know it, it was a 2 or 3 possession game. And then that's not the same thing as giving your best players a big lead to kind of secure. You know, when it's starting to go into like the, you know, 12, maybe that's when, all right, we still got double digits. Let's put in some of our closers. Not that this is closing in the third quarter, but let's get ourselves a nice cushion back up to a nice cushion for the fourth quarter. And I that didn't happen.
No, so when they went on that run, I had the fortune of watching this live, so I didn't know that we were going to lose. I had to witness it firsthand, which was unfortunate because midway through the third quarter, I was hoping that we could, you know, get a 25-30 point lead, get Henry Ellenson some run, and get some of the bench players out there and rest our starters. Again, that didn't happen. They went on a run with it was their bench. Boogie Cousins wasn't even in the game. And it was pretty similar to the game against Charlotte where we had a big lead. We weren't moving on offense physically with our bodies off the ball. We also weren't moving the ball. And they were, you know. So if you stay in motion, you stay in the flow of the game, you know, you're not trying to force some sort of out or you know, you're not trying to force the game to be won by you by somehow not making mistakes. Moves. Yeah, you're trying to not make mistakes at that point, and that's what they're trying to do.
You're relying more on yourself than relying on your teammates. It comes down to that.
Exactly. And you know, Andre
you're
Drummond,
moving the ball, you're trusting in each other. But if you're just like, all right, I'm going to win this game or I'm going to lose this game, then that's what's going to happen.
Yeah,
and then you lose.
Yeah, exactly. And you're sitting in the game trying to think about how you don't lose the game as opposed to thinking about how you're going to win the game. And, you know, I will say Andre Drummond played really well at the rim on defense.
Sure.
He had 7 blocks.
That was nice.
Unfortunately, this is a common theme with the Pistons defense. They can't guard stretch bigs, and Boogie Cousins is that now. And he hit
some of those threes were
daggers. Couple daggers. But, and I, you know, I think that Stan Van Gundy had a big issue figuring out matchups. Boban Marjanovic couldn't play when Boogie's in the game because he can't guard Boogie 25 feet from the basket. I mean, that'd be comical. So, you know.
He can't guard Boogie 12 feet.
No, he just can't guard. He just shouldn't.
Not many guys can guard Boogie, but Boban certainly can't.
Yeah.
Boban could put his arms up against Boogie 3 feet away from the basket and maybe get a block.
And maybe get dunked on as well. You know, yeah, I mean.
Yeah, he might get dunked on. All right, enough of that woeful stuff.
Yeah, let's move on.
You know, Warriors, we don't really need to talk too much about it. Yeah, the Pistons lost by 20 to the Warriors. You know, I don't know if there's bettors out there that listen to this, or, you know, maybe that probably would have been a pretty sound bet. I don't know what Vegas had back. I don't do that. I would assume that that's not too far out of what the spread was. It was probably 12 or something like that. You know, the Pistons lost to the Warriors, and Clay went for 20-plus, KD went for 20-plus, and Steph went for 20-plus. And when that happens, these Pistons aren't winning that game anytime soon. But one thing I wanted to talk about, and we wanted to switch gears, not talk about the game so much, and talk about what we're seeing in the games, particularly more numerically speaking, about what's the problem with the Pistons? Not just style of play, not just, you know, not just scheme essentially, but what is the nuts and bolts problem with this team? Looking at their last eight games, I just wanted to read off just some numbers to you guys, and just so you can hear some of these totals that are going up against us. In their last eight games, and this isn't all eight games, but some of the point totals that they put up were that opposing teams have put up against the Pistons are 119, 105, 121, 114, 124, albeit in double OT. They only allowed 100 against the Kings, but that's also an 18-point collapse where they lost by 6. And then they lost, and then the Dubs put up 127 points. Now the Pistons are still, I don't know, they were at least before the Warriors game a top 10 defensive rating team. They were top 5 in opponents' points per game. But that is troubling bad. That is, and the Pistons' good numbers for their defensive ratings are from, most of those numbers are from the beginning of the season where they're really shutting down teams at home. That's not the same. This team is not a top 10 defensive team. No one would tell you that it is. Joe, what, I mean, right? That's one of the biggest issues.
Huge.
Is defensive rating.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's tough to kind of analyze the issues on defense here, but there's a couple things that really pop out to you. I think beginning with the Miami Heat game, until the Warriors game, five games. Teams are shooting 49% from three against us. I mean, you're not on a lot of attempts. You're not going to win games if teams are shooting 49% from three.
If your best shooter is shooting 49% from three, then that's a hell of a
pay that man.
Shooter.
Yeah.
If your whole team is shooting 49% from three against you, you got leaky problems.
Over six games. So this is, I mean, it's, I guess it's a small sample size in a sense, but that's a really big sample.
That's not too small, though.
No, that's a lot. I mean, that's a lot of games, and 49% is completely insane. So what you have to ask yourself is, you know, sort of why is this happening? I think there's a couple of different things that are taking place. For one, again, we struggle mightily against stretch bigs. This goes back to last year when Anthony Davis scored, I believe, 56 points against us, career high. Porzingis, career high. Marc Gasol ties a career high. You know,
Kevin Love against us.
He feasts
against
us.
Against the Pistons.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Also, guys like Boogie.
Guys like Boogie, Miles Turner. You know, even the lesser
even
known.
Yeah,
shut it out
to about
big.
18 feet.
We can't cover them. That's a huge matchup problem. So I think that's you know, that's definitely part of the equation. You know, another thing is you know, how is our movement on defense? Are we switching? Are we communicating, honestly? I don't know because I can't necessarily hear, but it doesn't look like we're communicating on defense and we're switching, we're calling out screens, what have you. Are we closing out on defense? Because guys are getting open.
You're seeing a lot of late closeouts.
Late closeouts.
Just a second late. And it's really hard to analyze, you know, NBA defense, you know, with your league pass if you're watching on your computer or something like that. Sometimes it can be a little hard to see how, you know, NBA players go into the gym on the during their summers to try and gain a half second in separation for a shot to get off. And when the Pistons are a second late closing out on some of these closeouts, and it's just based on some miscommunication, then that's an open shot for an NBA shooter, and it's been going in.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's another thing. There's kind of an element of luck to it, I think. I mean, there's been a lot of difficult shots that, you know, players have been hitting. CJ McCollum hit a couple of really tough shots with a hand in his eye. Obviously, Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, I mean, they can hit it from anywhere with anyone in their face. Yeah, so that's sort of an outlier. I mean, Boogie Cousins, the two threes that he hit late in the game, were with a man in his face, and potentially he was fouled. You know, so there is an element of luck there where teams are just hitting shots. There's nothing you can do, but, you know, this is six games and 49%, so you have to change something on defense. You know, maybe, you know, get up on people, maybe switch on screens a little bit more, maybe give up drives a couple times in order to prevent people from shooting three. I don't really know. I don't know.
I think one thing that you notice defensively with this team is Reggie.
Right.
We don't need to be saying that he's getting his legs under him anymore. His legs should be under him by now. He's been playing. He played in, I don't know how many games since he's been back. He's been back for 2 months now, a month and a half now of NBA games. So plenty of games are under his belt, but he continually gets roasted by guards. They're getting into the paint, making Drummond look bad when he overcommits, whether that be on a screen, whether that just be on a dribble drive. But he needs Drummond's job is to stop the driver from getting to the hole. He's the last line of defense. So if he's either over rotating it and kind of overcompensating for Reggie, then what does that do? It you might need some help defense coming in as well. It is just leaving shooters all around the arc wide open, and when that happens, then you're getting open shots and they're making them, like we already just said. So that's something that's you know you gotta hope that Reggie can do a little bit better at stopping his man from getting into the paint at will.
One real quick point. You almost have to think that it's a game plan strategy from the other team's point of view, that they see something that we're doing on defense. Maybe it is Reggie Jackson's lack of conditioning or ability to catch up on the pick and roll. I'm not really too sure, but it almost feels like teams are out game planning us from that standpoint, because this is just happening too often over these games, and we need to fix something quickly or make a change in our lineup and our defensive scheme so that teams aren't getting these open, you know, corner three-pointers.
And especially when you have a guy like KCP, who's one of the better defenders, especially at his position, but definitely one of the better on-ball defenders in the Eastern Conference. We already made mention of Stanley Johnson, and while it might not show up on the stat sheet, he is really good at getting up in your space. He's really good at not letting guys go by him and getting up in your chest. Even when you're, you know, 26 feet away from the basket. So I think that that's kind of even more troublesome. And unfortunately, the lineup change can't be, we can't be thinking too offensively with our lineups right now because of the liabilities on defense. You know, you would like to see lineups with maybe John Lohr and Tobias Harris, that they're been our two best forwards for sure. So far this season, but you can't do it because one of those guys has to guard the three, and neither of those guys can guard the three. So, and that's a position that has been tearing us up all season. One thing that we noted as well, Joe, you brought it up to me, and this goes into coaching for sure, and this is something that definitely falls on the lap, I think, of Stan Van Gundy. You have your team playing really, really well for three quarters of a game. You can't allow big, big quarters against the Pistons or against any team. You can't have these lopsided quarters where you either lost your lead, you might have been buried because of this quarter, or you know now a game is tight that shouldn't be tight. Just some numbers that you brought up, Joe. Over the past few games, the Pistons have allowed in a singular quarter 32 points, that was against the Kings in the fourth, 32-17. They allowed 41 points against the Warriors. Now that game was close until the third quarter, when the Warriors scored 41 points, and they can do that. The Hornets made a game of a game that had no right being a game, when they scored 44 points in the fourth quarter. And then the Pacers and the, The Heat both scored 36 and one scored 37 in the first quarter. That you can't have these types of quarters that you're allowing this much offense. It's killing momentum, and it's making you battle back or try to get into games that you essentially have no right being in.
Yeah, no, it's been a major issue over the recent games here. So I don't know what sort of changes you make. Obviously, you have to come out the gates aggressive and playing well. So you can't be giving up 37, 36 points in the first quarter. And then when you have a lead, you can't be giving up 40-plus points in the fourth or in the third. So, you know, that's kind of a coaching thing, right? Like, if a team's going on a run, you have to either call a timeout, make a change to your offense or your defense, or, put in a different players, or maybe approach your team mentally from a different position instead of yelling and screaming.
Just give them a new look.
Right, give them a new look, or run some different plays. Or instead of having Reggie run the pick and roll with Andre Drummond, start or keep running KCP off screens. Maybe for once this season, call play for Stanley Johnson. I don't know if that's a crazy thought or not, but switch it.
You might get baptized by some people for that, but I agree. I think he needs to call.
Think you need to switch it up or figure out. I just don't think you can place the blame on these big, quarters on the players. I mean, you obviously can't to a certain extent because they're the ones out there performing, but the coach has to make some changes in order to prevent these big quarters, and it's costing us big, especially against the Kings.
I think that was, we talked about that a little bit. You ran with a Ish Smith and Boban Marjanovic lineup for maybe 4 minutes too long, and that's can be all that it takes in the NBA for a game to no longer be as competitive as it once was, or for to allow a team like the Kings back into the contest. Switching gears, obviously big picture stuff, too many points allowed in total, and especially too many points allowed in some quarters. Changes need to be made. I think one of those things you might see is maybe, which is kind of hard, it might be hard for Pistons here fans to hear, but supplementing a little bit of the time that you might be giving to John Moore, Tobias Harris, to Stanley Johnson, because he's just as frankly a better defender. He's not doing much for us on offense, but the defense has been the biggest issue, at least as of recently. I think all of those games that we just kind of ran through are a testament to that. Now, one thing we want to talk about as well, and this is the news of the day for Pistons fans and going to be the news of the week, hopefully not the news of too much longer after that, but one of our most consistent and just best players, in Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. And this is from DetroitBadBoys.com. Shout out to those guys. KCP has a grade 2 left rotator cuff strain. That's according to the Pistons. And he was ruled out for tonight's game against the Jazz. He's listed as doubtful for the West Coast finale against the Los Angeles Lakers. So one thing that was noted in the article, the Bad Boys article, was Jimmy Butler had suffered a similar injury, maybe the same injury. It was a grade 2 strain, and he was out for a month. There's been some people on Twitter and people that are actually affiliated with the team that have showed some optimism that it's only a temporary setback. But, KCP's joining Reggie Bullock, Michael Gabigi, I can't say his name, Bedijay, sorry, on the injured list. And, we can expect Stanley Johnson and Darren Hilliard, who Darren Hilliard, can't hit water either, he fell out of a boat, to be into the starting lineup. So, I don't know, that's a major, major blow. Not only in three-point shooting, not only in individual level of defense, but just the attitude that he brings to the game and the way that he approaches the game and the way that he's so professional around basketball. That is a big blow to the Pistons.
Yeah, I think he kind of sets the standard for them on defense and offense in terms of sort of effort and tenacity. And that's something that definitely Andre Drummond needs and the rest of them need as well. he's the anchor of that defense and just the general energy for the Pistons. So, you know, they're professional teams. You kind of have to have the mentality of next man up. So we have to move forward from here on out. It's huge bummer because he's, again, like you said, been our most consistent player. He's shooting, 39% from three at this point.
And in his last five games, too, 50% from three and 45% from the floor. We talked about this. And, you know, one thing that just to note, it's so in his last five, this is also kind of the Warriors game where I think he suffered this injury coming off the screen in the first quarter. So the numbers might be a little skewed. He's only averaging, you know, roughly around 10 to 12 shots a game. That's just frankly not enough for him. But that's not something that we're going to have to worry about right now just because he's not in the lineup. So it really is, you know, kind of a next man up sort of thing, unfortunately. And, you know, our bench is already as thin as it is, and we don't have a deep rotation as is that we go into, especially at that position. So it's really going to be it's a big blow for the Pistons. So you've got to hope that someone steps up, and I'm looking at Stanley Johnson to be that guy.
Yeah, same. I mean, I think he – you know, this is the opportunity that he's been looking for, and I think it's going to open up, obviously, some more playing time for him. I'm not sure yet. Do you know if he's going to be starting at the two guard or if he's going to be coming off the bench? Or are we sure exactly what the starting lineup is going to be?
I have a computer open, cool. Obviously, with what we're recording here. Let me see.
Let's take a look. But yeah, I mean, I think we need to, in general, get him more looks and keep him running off screens. And I think we need to do the same with Stanley Johnson, getting him in situations where he has a couple feet of separation, and really his only option is to shoot. So, are you taking a look at that?
Yeah, taking a look. I don't know if they have anything right now. It looks like, here we go. MLive is saying, they're going to turn to Stanley Johnson and Darren Hilliard as the options on the wing. You know, Johnson had a pretty nice game against Warriors or whatever. It's not saying much. I don't know what they're going to do with the lineup, honestly, but I guess it would make sense that you would put it. I can't imagine you go with a lineup of Lore. You know, I can't imagine Marcus Morris playing the two.
No. It's definitely going to be one of either Stanley Johnson or. But I know earlier in the season when KCP was out of game, we put Darren Hilliard there. But he's been playing really, really
poorly. Yeah, I think the Darren Hilliard experiment has been kind of snuffed out, as it should be, at least right now. You know, I think he's a player that just needs a little bit more time to develop. Not saying that he's a bad player, just saying this stretch of the season is so crucial for the Pistons that you need guys that have been on the floor a little bit more regularly. And Stanley's been that guy recently, and, you know, he got a lot more minutes last year. And he did play some two last year as well. He did come in for KCP at times. So that's what I would expect. Now, you know, a couple of, not necessarily closing, I guess some closing thoughts here as we approach the 50-minute mark. One thing we want to talk about that was hopefully a sign of good things to come, and I know it might be hard for people to hear that just because you're coming off of a collapse loss and then a blowout loss against the best team in the NBA. There's been flashes of playoff quality Detroit Pistons these past few games, particularly out of Andre Drummond and Reggie Jackson, who are, at the end of the day, with how great KCP has been playing, with how great Tobias Harris is playing, they are kind of support roles. They're not your feature guys. You know, this team really does go as far as Reggie and Dre can take us. And I just want to, you know, I know I've been looking, kind of paying more attention to the last five games, but for Andre Drummond, just some of his numbers in the past five, 17 points a game, you're seeing him shoot it at 61.3% from the floor. One thing I've noticed, Joe, with Andre Drummond is shot selection has just improved immensely over these past few games. The Hail Mary hook shots from 15 feet away from the hoop have gone down dramatically, and that is, you can't throw away possessions like that. So that's been something that I think has been a big reason to be happy if you're a Pistons fan.
Yeah, I think it got a little bit ugly against the Warriors at a couple of different times when we were trying desperately to get back in the ball game. He threw up a couple of desperate shots and looked at the ref for a foul, and there clearly wasn't a foul there. But outside of that, I think over the last six or seven games, for starters, I think he's gotten really good post position, running down the floor, embodying up his man. If he gets the ball like 4 to 7 feet, he's in a really good position to turn around and shoot that hook shot. If he's 10 or 11 feet, that is not an ideal situation to shoot that that little baby hook, and he will do it. He's done it before.
Yeah.
So I think
I wrote an article about this last year actually on DetroitBadBoys.com. Dre had a one of the things that I had noticed was when he got the ball in the post, it never left the post. So it didn't matter if he was unable to actually get position and to get himself into a scoring area. If he got the ball down there, the shot was going up. And the longer he held onto the ball, the least chances he had at making the shot. Because he's not a true, you know, he's more of a one-move, two-move kind of guy. He's not a wizard down there. He doesn't have the kind of skill of like a Zach Randolph or a Greg Monroe even to kind of work his way in there and then start making some moves. He really needs to kind of be decisive with it. And what and it's just, you know, it's been a really poor just play in general, and it's drained offensive possessions when, you know, you're throwing it to him 12 feet down and then the ball's not coming out and he's throwing up a brick.
Yeah, so, yeah, yeah. I mean, that being said, you do need to get the ball to him early. I think it's crucial to his mentality throughout the game. If he can get the ball in a couple looks early on in the game and get a couple shots to fall, I think that really increases his confidence and his aggressiveness throughout the game. So I think you definitely need to look for him early. I think it's on him probably to get good post position or to set a really solid screen and then roll really hard to make it easier for the guard to get a little separation and find him as well. So I think, you know, we need to get him touches and get him involved as much as possible. And get him some shots early on the game. But it's sort of on him and I guess our offense to a certain extent to make those good, efficient looks that don't, you know, take away from his confidence. Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, that's huge as well. So I think he's been doing a really good job, and I think Reggie's kind of settled in. He's finding his shot as well as moving the ball a bit. Unfortunately, we're not making shots, and sometimes that's just the difference between winning and losing a game. Again, if the team's shooting 49% from three, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I looked it up a bit earlier, I think we're shooting 34-35% from three, and that's over, you know, 130-140 shots. That's a lot of different – that's a lot of points. So sometimes it does come down to that. But we are moving the rock and we're getting good looks. Reggie's been playing pretty well. Andre's been playing pretty well on offense. Tobias, who we haven't really discussed too much so far.
No, he's just kind of something that we're taking him for granted. I'm going to go ahead and just take Tobias for granted. That 18, 19 points a game coming off.
He's kind of a silent assassin to a sense because he gets the ball and he makes a move really quickly. And he doesn't hold on to it for a long period of time. He just kind of puts his head down and goes towards the hoop or takes a dribble and shoots a shot. I said this about
Tobias before. Tobias has a knack for, if he goes down on the floor and he likes a matchup that he sees and you get it to him early, it might be on the baseline, maybe mid-postish sort of region there, range there on the baseline. He's a bully, and he's like one move, two move, and he's at the cup and finishing strong. So that's something that you know we're really hoping to see. It's been one of the few bright spots. There's only been about, I think I can count them. It seems like there's been three bright spots. It's been John Lohr, Marcus, or Stanley, no, sorry, not Marcus Morrison, not Stanley Johnson, John Lohr, Tobias Harris, and KCP's improved, you know, improved shot and just improved play overall. So, but no, you're right, Joe. Reggie has been playing a lot better. Just wanted to kind of look over some of his numbers too. Just so for some context, you know, he's shooting, his scoring's gone way up. I mean, his season average is still around 16, which is a little bit lower than it was last season. But he's still scoring 21 points a game right now. He's at 48% from the floor, which you will definitely take, and 43.5% from three in his past few games. So definitely something that that has been a sight for sore eyes. You know, with Reggie, you get the good, you get the bad, you get the missed shots in ISO to clinch games, but he's also the guy that kind of puts you in the position to do that, and, you know, he gets the green light to take those shots because, you know, as you've seen so many times before, Stan Van Gundy is calling that as the play. So it has been – that is a good sign. There's been glimpses of this Pistons teams recently that have looked like the playoffs Pistons teams of last season, and I don't think that you could say that for, you know, pretty much the entire month of December and, you know, early on here in January. So that's something that I feel good about, and it's something where you hope that they can squeeze a win out tonight against the Jazz. You're hoping that they can really take it to the Lakers in that final game of the West Coast road trip and bring it back home and start to do some things and get some rhythm and start winning some of these games that are going to be crucial when it comes down to March and when you're trying to make the playoffs.
Is there anything specifically that you'd like to see from them going forward that you think will be pretty crucial to their success?
I think we touched on it lightly. I would like to see more design plays and more looks for Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. I think when you're just shooting it that well, and he is so natural at coming off screens, and he is really best when he's either when he's in motion shooting threes. So when he's coming off screens and he's in rhythm and you're hitting him at the right spot, or if he's pulling up, I want to see more looks for KCP overall. That's something that I think would be great. Other than that, you really just hope that the Reggie and Andre Drummond thing continues to look like it is right now, offensively speaking at least. That's the biggest thing that I think I'd like to see. What about you? Is there something that...
Yeah, I agree. I think once KCP gets healthy, I'd like to see him be more of a vocal point of our offense. I'd like to get him some easier shots off screens. Call some more plays for him. I don't understand when he's, you know, five for six from three-point land like he was the other night. We're not feeding him the ball. He's got the hot hand. You got to find him. You got to call plays for him. And, you know, when you call plays for players, they take note of that. They take the responsibility of the offense. It's kind of a self-esteem booster as well. So I think we need to do that. You know, I also think that, which we're naturally going to do because he's hurt, I think we need to get Stanley Johnson some more playing time. And I think we just in general need to...
Not a popular opinion.
I think
you and I are kind of a little bit in the minority on the Stanley Johnson
really
believe train, but I at least what I've seen so far via NBA Twitter and the blogosphere.
Reddit Detroit Pistons is a big fan of the Stanley Johnson more minutes, so I think it might be a source thing. The Detroit Pistons.
All right,
huge.
Shout out to Reddit.
Yeah, shout out to
Detroit
Reddit
Pistons
for sure. So I think there's you know, different opinions on this for sure, but I think via the eye test, I think you need to get him some more playing time, and because I think he adds a dynamic to this team that we do not have otherwise on the defensive side of the ball. And let's not overlook his passing. He's been passing the ball really well.
He has been.
He gets his confidence shooting, I think that'll be huge for this offense. And at this point in time,
back up to 8 points a game like he was last season. Or I think he was at six, maybe.
I know. I think you're right. I think he was
at
8 points.
8 points a game. That would be so big for this team.
Yeah.
No, yeah, I think that's two. Yeah, that's a good point. I think that's one of the things I'd like to see as well. Joe, I don't have anything. One thing I did want to note is that with the launch of Inside the Cylinder, you know, I think Stan Van Gundy's listening to this, and I think that he's definitely going to be taking in some of our critiques, some of our suggestions, and putting it out there on the floor. So we think here at Inside the Cylinder that this is going to be the launch of good things to come and good vibes, good Piston-y vibes going throughout the airwaves. And, and then, you know, that's really it. I just wanted to make that note. And when we're in the playoffs come March, I'm going to play this clip. And y'all going to believe.
Yeah, I feel pretty confident in that as well. D. Ferdinand, wasn't that a nickname back in the day?
D. Ferdinand? Oh, yeah, that's a... You can still find that on the gram, too, if you guys want to hit me up on the gram. You can hit up D.
Nice.
_Ferdinand, but no one needs to see my stupid pictures of beer and you know, whatever sort of cliche Instagram photos it is that I'm putting up. Yeah, so I guess the last thing, just wanted to plug our stuff one more time. Inside the Cylinder, we are part of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. You can find us on almightyballer.com. You can find this show's, you know, both me and Joe are running the Twitter for Pistony Hot Takes. You can find us at Inside the Cylinder, CLYNDR. Had to shorten it up because that's what Twitter does to you. And, you know, I'm one of your co-hosts, David Fernandez. You can find me on DetroitBadBoys.com and also at on Twitter at _Fernandula, FERNANANTULA. J-Mac?
Yeah, again, this is co-host Joey Mack here. You can find me on Twitter at J.Mack, J.DOTMACK on Twitter. Give me a follow. Also, hit us up on our Twitter as well if you have any disagreements or agreements or any feedback or anything like that. We're open to anything there. Other than that, thanks for listening in, and we will definitely catch you guys next week.
Peace.